Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
2 hours down, 1 hour to go. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. I'm Anthony Herron. We have just been blazing through the first couple hours of the show here, having a fantastic time in the, it's a bit of the sports abyss, if you will, because there's not a lot of on-court, on-field action happening on this night. You got the All-Star game for Major League Baseball tomorrow night, and then everybody kind of just getting back to their haunts, if you will, getting back to their team locales the following day. But we have been having fun nonetheless. So let's continue to keep the fun rolling here on Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score by going back out to the Score Hotline presented by Circus Sports Illinois. Join up with my guy Adam Rittenberg, ESPN senior writer and one of my partners over at SiriusXM, one of the best college football writers in the business. He is on Twitter at ESPN Rittenberg. Adam, what's happening this evening, man? How you doing?
I'm doing great, brother. Great to be on with you. Hope everything's good.
Everything is fantastic. Appreciate you taking the time to be with me. Looking forward to seeing you next week in Indianapolis. But before we get to anything related to college football, because I know that you are as passionate a sports fan as there is, in addition to writing about a variety of topics, but I have over the past, maybe hour of the show here, I've been talking about moments of tension in my sports fandom from my past. I was talking about Charles Smith and the layups, the block shots back in the 93 Eastern Conference Finals, watching that as a youngster and just how worked up I was. And I kind of related it to the Blair Witch Project, a horror film I was watching a little bit later in my teenage years. What's a moment of sports tension in your fandom, your sports fanaticism from years past? What's one of the most worked up and tense you've been watching a game?
Wow. Probably would be, I'm just trying to think, like here in Chicago, some of those Blackhawks series, wasn't there a game seven? Yeah. I want to say maybe the Red Wings series 1 year, or maybe it was a little bit further along in the playoffs where it was just super intense, knowing that, the one goal either way was going to make the difference. And one of the heartbreakers was certainly the game seven against the Kings that knocked out the Hawks, during All that right. run. I think they won the cup the following year. So yeah, I think some of those were definitely high tension moments that I can remember. I mean, growing up, it was San Francisco Giants, a little bit of 49ers. That's where I grew up, and so. But yeah, I think that's one that certainly jumps to mind here. Which is somewhat recent.
And my wife and I was telling this story on the station a couple of weeks ago, just thinking back to 2003 and the way that my wife, who's from New England, so she's a huge Red Sox fan. And so before they had broken their curse in 2003 and before the Cubs had broken their curse in 2003, both baseball teams lost in crushing, heartbreaking fashion. And I don't remember the exact amount of days in between where the Red Sox lose to the Yankees in a game seven. And you got the Moises Alou, Steve Bartman situation down the sidelines there for the Cubs. It was just there was a lot of tension and some crushing moments as we were kind of starting our married lives together at that point. So you could take the conversation of tension and sports heartbreak in a lot of different directions. But that's not why you call it, Adam Rittenberg. From a college perspective, there was something before I get to kind of the full Big Ten Media Day scope of things. I saw you just wrote for ESPN.com about Northwestern football and the, I guess we'll call it a stadium, at least the new home venue, the not so permanent home venue that's going to be there as they're renovating the actual stadium there in Evanston. But football coach David Braun put up some of his own money to make sure this project was going to be able to go through. Give me a few of the ins and outs that you wrote about there.
Sure. Well, as your listeners probably know, Northwestern's in the middle of a massive renovation of Ryan Field, $800 million project that was finally approved late last year by the city of Evanston. And so the team is going to be displaced for two full seasons. And so people are wondering, well, why didn't they have a plan in place? Well, they did explore plans here in the city. The problem is, two of the venues are not available till after baseball season, including Wrigley Field, where Northwestern will play a couple of games. They looked at SeatGeek Stadium down where the Fire used to play wasn't the most exciting option. Soldier Field is a really difficult option if you look at all the dates for both Bears and Chicago Fire games and training. And so, they kind of revived an idea that had been brought up by former coach Pat Fitzgerald years ago to play the games there on campus at, a temporary facility, and a facility that would certainly, top out, nowhere near what most Big Ten venues or power conference venues as far as capacity goes, but one that was workable potentially for Northwestern as it got closer and closer to the season. This idea got some traction, and David Braun, the relatively new coach there, and his wife really got behind this idea, so much so, and that they put up their own money to kind of get the project launched there around April 1, first week of April, and then they announced it about 10 days later. So it's a really interesting project, certainly not what we're accustomed to in college football, but I've been out there a few times to see the progress. They're using a company actually based in the West Suburbs that does these types of structures for all sorts of events, sporting events around the world, and they're now building the stadium to get ready for the first five games of the season. The last two games against Ohio State and Illinois will be played at Wrigley Field after the Cubs season is complete, but the first five will be there on campus. Same with next year. There's going to be the majority of their games will be on campus. So as David told me, it's not the most perfect setting, but it is theirs, and they feel like they can make it a true home field advantage that they would have lost had the team had to leave campus completely for the next two seasons.
And it's one thing for Pat Fitzgerald, who had been at the university coaching the football program forever, has put plenty of money in the bank as the idea is being broached. David Braun, it's the first big job that he's had as a head coach. He hasn't cashed nearly as many checks as Pat Fitzgerald would have cashed if he would have gone down this road here. So how about that aspect of it? How much of that factored into the amount of money Braun and his wife, Kristen, were sort of willing to put forward in this? And I assume there must be some version of this where they'll be reimbursed by the university, or no?
No, I mean, this is a gift that they it's part of this fundraising that, I mean, they'll be reimbursed by the university if he continues to do well and get new contracts. I mean, obviously he has a head coach's contract now, which is a different, income level than he had as an assistant coming in. But they really believed in this. And, David, even though he's been on campus only about 18 months, has seen a lot. Obviously saw all the controversy last summer, with Pat Fitzgerald's firing and all the lawsuits and the hazing, and then obviously led the team through a season that had very low expectations. They ended up winning eight games, a bowl game. He lands a permanent job, and I think his thing is, he sees Ryan Field, 2 years away, an $800 million project that has always been seen as a game changer for the program. But how do you get there? And I think the concern is, if they had left campus completely, they might have really lost momentum on the field. Which again, if they play on campus, I know it's odd, 15,000 seats is not a lot, but you can actually, in their minds, create a true home field advantage that maybe had never been there before, because so many road fans show up at their games, they've shown up at their games over the years. So by having a smaller stadium, they stay on campus. Ideally, they can keep winning, bridge that gap, to the new Ryan Field, and not lose the momentum that they were able to establish in surprising fashion last season.
Yep, there's no doubt the results last season, making a bowl game, that was certainly a surprising way to end after how things went shortly before Northwestern reported for training camp last season. Adam Rittenberg, my guest here on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score, and ESPN college football writer. Adam will be in Indianapolis, no doubt, next week for Big Ten Football Media Days. I'm going to be there as well. Looking forward to seeing you there in person. From a Big Ten football perspective, what would you say is sort of the chief storyline of many that you will have your eye on in Indy?
Well, it's just the arrival of the four teams from the West Coast. I mean, this is a historic season, nationally for college football, in the sense that all four major conferences that are left are welcoming new members. But perhaps none, it's more dramatic than the Big Ten adding, four from the West Coast, USC, UCLA, Oregon, and Washington. So this is an 18-member conference now. It's a conference that spans coast to coast. It includes both teams that competed for a national championship last year, including Michigan. So I think the new programs and just what the Big Ten is going to be going forward is going to be the storyline. But then you also have, you know, a new head coach at Michigan and Sharon Moore, who I visited with a few weeks ago in Ann Arbor. He's just saying it's still been a whirlwind since he took over for Jim Harbaugh. You have Ohio State, which now is going on 10 full years without a national championship, making massive investments in NIL and bringing in top players after losing three in a row to the University of Michigan. You have an Oregon team, Ant, that I think has the capability of winning the Big Ten in their first year in the conference and getting back to the college football playoff for the first time since its first year back in 2014 when they ended up losing to Ohio State in the national title game. So there's no shortage of storylines when you talk about coaches and teams and players, and certainly the makeup of the conference, you know, now forever changed with the four additions from the West Coast.
And Michigan loses Jim Harbaugh back to the National Football League. Sharon Moore takes over. He handled his audition last season as well as anyone could have handled that with the victories he led Michigan football to while Jim Harbaugh had to miss games in the regular season via suspension. But now he gets the big whistle for the full time for the first time. So not only is there turnover at the head coach, at coordinator, the roster, a lot of the championship DNA that had been there leading Michigan to the last three Big Ten titles and a national championship, now gone to the NFL as well. So how should we view the defending national champs going into the fall?
Well, I think there's some obvious questions, and we can get to them in a minute, including quarterback. That's the biggest one. Who's going to be the quarterback, and how effective will that player be replacing a top 10 draft pick in J.J. McCarthy? But I'll say this, Ant, if you were to ask a lot of NFL scouts out there, who's the best cornerback in college football? They might say Will Johnson from Michigan. If you ask them who's the best interior defensive lineman in college football, some of them might say Mason Graham, also at Michigan. If you ask them who the best tight end for the draft eligible group is in college football, I think most of them would say Colston Loveland from Michigan. So it's not as if this cupboard is bare. There's actually more high-level draft picks in my mind, if you throw a guy like Kenneth Grant Jr. in there as well, on this team than there were last year. J.J. McCarthy, I believe, was the only Michigan player drafted in the top 50, even though they had a record number of picks. They had tremendous depth. But in terms of high-level guys, this year's team, the 2024 Wolverines, perhaps have more of them. Now, they have to get quarterback right. I think that everyone's excited about Donovan Edwards at running back. Can he recapture the form we saw at the end of the 2022 season after what he would admit is a disappointing 2023 season? He's on the cover of the EA game, and everyone's all excited about him. But, you know, Michigan's going to, you know, still play really good defense, and I think they're going to try to do what they do, which is control the line of scrimmage, run the ball, but also have a lot of playmakers. That's what their new coordinator on offense, Kirk Campbell, who was the quarterback's coach last year, told me. He sees playmakers around this offense. He's obviously got to figure out the quarterback spot, but it's a very interesting unit to watch, because if they can be, you know, as good or better on offense, they absolutely are a college football playoff contender because of what they have coming back still on the defensive side.
Yeah, you mentioned Blake Corman. He ends up being a third-round pick, and with Donovan Edwards, with his physical capabilities, there's a chance that he can end up being a draft pick that goes even higher than Corum does if he puts kind of everything together for this coming season in the way that he might be capable of. So, yeah, there's no doubt a lot of talent returns to Ann Arbor. In Columbus, with Ohio State, with Ryan Day, it does seem that because they've lost to Michigan the last 3 years, and you referenced, it's been a decade without a national title for most programs, that's not a drought. For Ohio State and their fan base, it feels like it's been too long from the Buckeyes' perspective. It does intrigue me the way that Ryan Day is viewed here, because he's been one of the top coaches in the industry in recent years, and the success is staggering. He hasn't lost to anyone who isn't coaching the Michigan Wolverines in a regular season game here. Is he... How would you describe the scrutiny that's on Ryan Day in the job ahead of him for this fall?
Yeah, I mean, in some ways it's not fair, right, to even say that he's underachieved or to criticize him in any way. But you know, Ant, you've been around that rivalry for a while just like I have. You've seen what it's done to coaches. You've seen what it's done to programs when you're unsuccessful. and Jim Harbaugh, as a talented a coach and player he was under tremendous pressure because of an inability to beat Ohio State. John Cooper lost his job because of an inability to beat Michigan. Michigan went all those years, all those coaches, without beating legitimate Ohio State teams, and now they run off three in a row. And now Sharon Moore gets that opportunity to extend that. So for Ryan Day, to me, with Michigan losing a record number of draft picks, with Ohio State making the types of investments that they have on their roster, retaining players on the defensive line and elsewhere, plus adding key pieces like Quinshon Judkins from Ole Miss at running back to complement Travion Henderson, Will Howard from Kansas State at quarterback, Caleb Downs, one of the top young defensive backs in the country, transferring in from Alabama. They had a couple of transfers from Alabama. If you don't beat Michigan this year at home, a supposedly weakened Michigan team, where are we at with Ryan Day? Like, that's how much pressure there is. And so I think anything short of a Big Ten title and or a deep college football playoff run is going to be viewed as a disappointment because of what Ohio State hasn't done in the last few years and what they have done from a personnel standpoint and an investment standpoint over the offseason. So if you want a team where the stakes could not be any higher for itself and its head coach, it's the Ohio State Buckeyes in 2024.
And you mentioned the new teams joining the Big Ten from the left coast, Adam. And, Oregon certainly seems coming into the season like the team, the traditional Pac-12 program, the Pacific time zone team. Out of those four entering the Big Ten, Oregon seemed the best positioned to come in and have a chance to win a Big Ten title. But as far as the coaches, Lincoln Riley has the biggest and best resume of any of those coaches coming in. And Miller Moss did have an exceptional bowl game for the Trojans. Do you see USC in its first season in the Big Ten as a legitimate contender, or is the roster not quite on par yet where Lincoln Riley could really be in that conversation?
Yeah, and talking to coaches, I think there's a feeling that it's a wait and see, right? Because I think Miller Moss will be fine. Lincoln Riley always finds ways to produce points. He's a lot like Ryan Day in that way. Quarterback is never a weakness for a Lincoln Riley or a Ryan Day coach team. The question for Lincoln, and this has been the issue throughout much of his career, do they have the defense to complement the offense? Because you're entering a league, and you know this better than anyone, Ant, you have to play defense at least a respectable level, if not an above-average level, to win in the Big Ten. And USC has not done that in recent years. Lincoln Riley's Oklahoma teams largely didn't do that. And so, they revamped their defensive staff. They, we talk about teams that made an impact player-wise in the portal. USC made a tremendous impact in terms of turning over its defensive staff, bringing in Danton Lynn from their rival UCLA to lead that staff, but also plucking guys from the NFL. They plucked the head coach in North Dakota State and that end. I mean, that's a star-studded defensive staff. They have to get better on that side of the ball if they are going to have any sort of opportunity to contend this year. And you do look at their schedule, going to Michigan in September, that's not going to be easy. They obviously have to play other really good teams throughout the year, and then Notre Dame and the non-conference, the Notre Dame team that I think absolutely has a chance to get to the college football playoff, and a team that really embarrassed the Trojans last year in Caleb Williams at Notre Dame Stadium. So this is a big year for Lincoln Riley, year three. USC expected to be making the playoff by now. A lot of people don't think that's going to happen this year, but they have that opportunity with some changes on the defensive side. That's the group to watch if you're going to measure the progress of this Lincoln Riley-led Trojans program.
Before I let you run, Adam, I am curious. I don't know if you're a big-time gamer, if you played all the football video games in years past, but of course, EA Sports College Football 25 making its debut this Friday is big news in the college sports consumption space. Are you one of the media members that made it a point to get your hands on an early copy?
I wasn't, but I was at the cover shoot down in Dallas where Donovan Edwards and Quinn Ewers and Travis Hunter were there, and saw the excitement around putting that together. And then certainly I've talked to a number of players and coaches last week at Big 12 Media Days in Vegas. That was the topic, and guys are learning about their ratings and sampling the games and talking about creating tournaments during preseason camp. Coaches will not have a huge problem you know, making sure their players are like at home the next few weeks, because that's all these guys want to do leading up to the season. They may have to just pull it back a little bit because that's all they want to do literally leading up to the season. So it's certainly exciting after a decade without a new version of the game, and to have the players in the game with their names and their ratings and their likenesses. It's a pretty cool situation right now if you're a gamer and you're a college football fan.
Yeah, I must admit, I was never really a gamer. I think the last game I owned was probably Madden 93. But in the late 90s, being in college, when my teammates would take the game out, it was fun to be able to play, you know, with the Iowa Hawkeyes and have number 99 out there tackling folks on occasion when I would mess around with it. So I'm glad the game is back. I'm glad the players are able to enjoy it. You looking forward to the cocktail sauce next week? Should we make an appointment to make sure that happens?
Oh man, they burn the nostrils. It's a good time. Yeah, we should do a dinner, Ant, me and you, and crushing some shrimp cocktail where do we go? Harry and Izzy's, or do we go to St. Elmo's? I forget last year.
I'm trying to think. I feel like it was Harry and Izzy's. I think is where we ended up and had some good steaks, some good cocktail sauce, and all those things that tends to happen when there's football on the way in Indy. I'm looking forward to seeing you there, man.
All right, man. Appreciate it.
All right, that is Adam Rittenberg of ESPN, my guest here tonight. And the video game itself, it does kind of bring back some memories of being in the dorm rooms back in Iowa City, and just the opportunity that now the players in and around college football have that had gone away for a while, but now there will be a chance to share in those profits, those proceeds that will come from the sale of these video games that will have their name, image, and likeness on them. And it makes all the sense in the world. That certainly should be the case. And there are some there's some work events, there's some fun events that are going on for me in the days and weeks to come. I recount a little bit of that for you here and talk a bit. And I mentioned earlier, I wanted to get Robbie Triano's thoughts on some of the tension that has been felt in his sports past. So we'll put Robbie on the mic and get some of that from him as well. We got some fun texts as well on the text line when I was talking about that topic, just of some of the most tense sports viewing, sports fandom moments from some of you out there as I harken back to some of that time for me as a youngster. So we'll get some of those texts, and I'll get Robbie to share one of his tales of being a tense young sports fan. We'll do that next on The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
So not exactly the breaking news that we've been watching for, very closely related to either Caleb Williams or Roma Dunze signing their contract with the Chicago Bears. There's some other texts about a topic we were talking about earlier that I'll get to in a moment on the text line. But there were a couple of people who were asking about some of the things that have been on the X about Caleb Williams, Roma Dunze, rumors about like Hard Knocks being there to watch them sign their contract and that already being done. I'm not going to act like I'm there at Hallis Hall to know for sure what has and hasn't happened. I do know that there's nothing that I've seen on social media at the moment that's credible in the least about Caleb or Rome, Williams or Dunze having actually have signed their Bears contract yet, or that for some reason it would be where they would be waiting on a non-live show in HBO Hard Knocks to like break the footage of them actually putting it out. I'm not completely clear what the advantage would be to wait for HBO Hard Knocks to release footage about Caleb and Rome and their contract. Because Hard Knocks isn't even a live show. You know, they'll end up showing footage from things that took place last week, earlier in the preseason, by the time their shows actually even make air. But I guess it'd be one thing to even consider that was plausible if Hard Knocks were a live show. But I don't really see what the advantage is for the Bears to, you know, have it, to put the image out there that perhaps Caleb Williams is holding out. Perhaps Roma Dunze is displeased with his contract just for a pre-taped documentary show to be able to showcase that once it debuts later. It just, that logic doesn't track as far as how I would evaluate things. But I've been wrong before. I don't know. But the latest, as far as the credible newsbreakers that have been out there, Ian Rappaport was talking about the contract with Caleb Williams and the Bears. And we've got at least the last time that Ian Rappaport has had earlier today, any public comments on what's going on with the Bears QB?
Yeah, and you're right. I don't get the sense that this is one of those situations where it might have like a rookie holdout or there's panic. And I know it was Roquan in Chicago years ago. Different regime, different cap guy, different entire situation. No panic here. But, you know, historically, generally, these deals get done right before they have to get done. So Roma Dunze's deal, I would be surprised if there's an issue there. Caleb Williams, a little bit of a different story. Now, he is eventually going to get a four-year, 39.5 or so million dollar fully guaranteed deal with most or all of his signing bonus up front. His situation's a little different because instead of an agent, he has more of, I would say, like a board of directors. He does not have an official NFL agent. He has an agent helping him, and then he has lawyers who are working on the deal. And sometimes, because of the way it's structured, this can take a little longer. Like many things in Caleb Williams, let's say, off-the-field situation business, it is a little unorthodox, it is a little not usual, but still, I would be surprised if there was an issue here. And even if there is an issue, you're right, things don't really get really real until the veterans show up. So in due time, this one's going to happen.
That was Ian Rappaport earlier on the NFL Network. So I don't know. He seems to indicate maybe he's not going to count it as or call it a holdout until the veterans show up on Friday and then everyone hits the practice field on Saturday. I don't know. I don't know exactly how a holdout is defined. Is it going to be tomorrow when the rookies show up? Is it going to be later in the week when the vets are set to report? But other news that's actually out there right now in the social space, apparently Skip Bayless of Fox Sports 1, he's got his show Undisputed. He's had a variety of co-hosts over the years that he's been with FS1. The most recent, most famous, and most successful co-host that he had was Shannon Sharp on the show Undisputed. And since Shannon Sharp left the show last year, then now there's been sort of a rotating cast of co-hosts that have been there with Skip. But apparently, Skip Bayless will be leaving the show. He's going to, I suppose, I don't know if it's announced his retirement. He's going to step down. His final show on Undisputed on FS1, it's going to be later on this summer. So no reports yet on exactly what the plans will be for that show on FS1 moving forward here. But that being said, it is noteworthy because of the way the industry has evolved. And frankly, Skip Bayless has been a huge part of the way that the television sports industry has evolved over the years because of the lightning rod way that Skip Bayless's commentary has been consumed in, you know, the decades that he's been at the forefront of it. He was a sports writer here in Chicago, sports writer in Dallas, a columnist of immense success in the written word, and then took that to television with his, you know, pretty bombastic style. A lot of you, it's been, you know, long enough ago at this point where a lot of you, you know, wouldn't even remember when ESPN2 was in its infancy. They launched a show called Cold Pizza, and Jay Crawford was on that show with Skip Bayless and Woody Page. And so at first it was just Skip and Woody, and they would, you know, have fairly lighthearted debates about things. And then as the show started to pick up a little bit more steam, initially the first athlete that Skip Bayless really had his ire trained on was Alex Rodriguez, and he would call him April Rod and May Rod. And, you know, like even, you know, prior to that, there was a lot of moments where, like, Jim Rome as a sports talk host on radio would have some unflattering things to say about athletes. There's a famous clip, you can all find it on social media, where Jim Rome in his television show, as he had called Rams quarterback Jim Everett, Chris Everett, comparing him to the women's tennis player. And Jim Everett went on Jim Rome's show and basically dared him to call him Chris to his face. Jim Rome did. And Jim Everett threw the table across the room, like literally got up and, you know, Until you see some football players in person, especially quarterbacks, you kind of think, ah, that guy's a QB. Whatever. How tough can he be? You see some of these quarterbacks in person, Jack, 6'5", 230. Like, Jim Everett's a big dude. So Jim Rome, he, you know, to his credit, I guess he went ahead and manned up, called him Chris to his face. Jim Everett snatched that table, threw it across the room on live TV, snatched Jim Rome up by the collar, and cameras go to black, you know, his color bars all over the place. And I don't think he pummeled him mercilessly or anything like that, but he did establish a level of physical dominance over him and then, you know, laid him on the ground apparently and went about his business. But so that sort of predated Skip Bayless in the level of bombast and frankly the level of disrespect that sports personalities were willing to show to athletes. It did, you know, speaking about it in some nuance here, in some ways it humanized athletes, kind of took them down a peg, took us, you know, down a peg a little bit. And where for so many years in the way that athletes and organizations had been discussed, there was this pedestal that athletes were constantly placed on. There was this distance between the public, the media, the athletes. Media frequently viewed historically as in some ways sort of shielding athletes, protecting them so that there could be this larger than life way that they were viewed. And then as we got into the 90s, then the amount of consumption that was there and the 24-hour coverage cycle that was available, then you saw the way that personalities like Jim Rome and then Skip Bayless, where Jim Rome was at least, he was a sports talk host. He spent hours every day discussing sports and sort of having his personality and his sort of specific dialogue in the way that he would talk about it and the level of disrespect that he became known for in the way that he discussed a lot of things. Skip Bayless was really the initial what, when I was teaching over at the Illinois Media School, I began using the term opinionist. Yeah, Skip was a columnist. He was a sports reporter as a writer, but from a television perspective, he wasn't a host. He wasn't an analyst. He wasn't an anchor. He's not a former pro athlete or coach or anything. He was on TV just for his opinions and really nothing else. And he was the really prominent one who kind of brought that into the industry and took it to levels that have really reshaped the way that sports television has operated. You can make a lot of cases for it not having done a lot of positive for the discourse in sports, for the discourse in a lot of other ways. It's devolved a lot of things about a level of respect or deference that we might have in the way that we discuss or debate or disagree about things in sports. He's made a lot of money doing it, though. And certainly after he got done with Alex Rodriguez, when LeBron James came to the NBA, then LeBron has certainly been the most famous and I guess most formidable athlete that Skip Bayless has made a lot of money, you know, saying negative things about over the years, to put it very simply. But again, apparently Skip Bayless is going to be leaving FS1. That's according to the New York Post and multiple reports out there. So his last show is going to be later this summer. So as we've been waiting to see if there would be any Caleb Williams or Roma Dunze news that would break during the show tonight, and we just got that little tidbit from about Skip Bayless. I was actually supposed to be headed out to L.A. There's the big Fox Sports does a preseason college football seminar outside of L.A. in this very grand, you know, beach resort every year leading into the football season. So not only Fox Sports brings the NFL announcers out there and the college football announcers out there, and Fox owns a big chunk of the Big Ten network. So then some of the most utilized Big Ten network announcers, we get to go out there as well. But just got a bunch of stuff going on with the new house and the suburban move and those things. So that's something that takes place later this week. It's always a great time. It's an educational time. It's a seminar. We, you know, talk about the preseason football rules and get together on a lot of those things, get to spend time with other sports personalities from the Fox Sports kind of family of networks, but usually get to interact with some of the coaches there too and pick their brains about certain things. So it's a seminar, and it's also just sort of a good networking mixer type of opportunity, but not going to go this year. Skip Bayless, not normally there. You know, he's not specifically a part of the football coverage for Fox Sports or anything like that, but certainly would have been if I wouldn't have sort of had to pull out at the last moment here, just because I want to get things done with our new house before I really get into football mode. But would have been an interesting thing to go there later this week on the heels of the Skip Bayless news and sort of pick folks' brains about, how that's being viewed within the Fox Sports family. But sure, I'll be able to get some of that scuttlebutt at a different time, because I don't mind a little scuttlebutt here and there. The next real work I will be doing, though, will be next week in Indianapolis. That's one thing I was talking to Adam Rittenberg about earlier with Big Ten Football Media Days, because the 18 teams from the Big Ten Conference that will be there, that will be represented. And what usually, when I go there for SiriusXM, that's normally been a two-day event for Big Ten Media Days, as it was a 12-team league and then a 14-team league in recent years. And now it's an 18-team league. It's going to be a three-day event divided up over the course of the 23rd, 24th, and 25th. A couple of those days will end up involving the newer teams from the Pacific time zone, USC, UCLA, Washington, and Oregon. And, of course, the 14 teams that were already previously in the Big Ten as well. But a lot of different storylines within that. The reason, one of the things that I asked Adam Rittenberg about was specifically the perception of Ryan Day and Ohio State, because there's so much talent that's been accumulated by the Buckeyes. And it's going to be a season where they're already viewed as one of the favorites, Ohio State and Georgia, Oregon in that conversation as well. Certainly can't forget about Michigan, but this expanded 12-team playoff and how teams will be perceived and what actually is viewed as success. Is making the playoff going to be enough for certain programs like Penn State to be viewed as having had a successful season? Or will it have to be more than that? Will it have to be winning a playoff game, advancing toward a national championship opportunity? The sport is evolving so much, so we'll see how the perception of success for certain programs evolves with it. I was talking about discourse a moment ago with the Skip Bayless news. I want to expand on that with a fairly shocking event in our nation that took place over the weekend and some of the discourse that surrounds that and just things in general. I want to react to what happened with former President Trump as I prepare to close out tonight's show. I'll do that next on Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
So the way that I talk about sports, talk about things in general, the amount of time I get to spend on the air, on television and radio, certainly feel pretty blessed because I do love what I get to do so much. And I'm under the impression that comes across often enough in the time I spend on the air. But that being said, I don't know that it's the most lucrative way to go about it, because while I do, try to pretty consistently exude a certain degree of enthusiasm, energy, and passion for the topics that I discuss, but I'm not necessarily prone to bombast, if you will. I'm certainly not prone to insult when it comes to the coaches, the players, the athletes, the participants that are involved in the things that in the sports, in the events that I'm covering. My goal is usually entertain, inform, try to give you a sense for how I view these things and my experience in having been a player and a coach and an evaluator of these moments. And it's honestly a little bit ironic that Skip Bayless stepping down from FS1 just happens within the last hour here, because discourse is a topic that I did want to discuss before I got off the air tonight. And like I was referencing, there are certainly some examples of very prominent members of the sports media who have not, in my opinion, haven't aided the discourse. And, our sensibilities with all these things are very subjective. What will be different from one person to the next. I try to err more on the side of being willing to tell you when I think someone's messing up, when I think a play caller isn't getting the job done, when I think fundamentals of an athlete are off, why something worked, why something didn't work. But I do try to deliver that. Or when I take callers, I try to interact with them with a level of respect with that discourse. And that does seem like it's continued to erode over the years, over the last really couple of decades, in our sports discourse and our political discourse as well. And both are things that we're all extremely, extremely passionate about. The level of gravity in the sports conversation pales in comparison to the life-altering things that could happen with some of the political discourse. And certainly all of you know at this point what happened on Saturday with the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. And my hope is just that that is sort of a touch point for folks as we enter deeper into the political season and the presidential election season, that it's something that will allow people to take a deep breath, to evaluate how they interact with each other, to evaluate the words that they choose to say on the air, the things that they choose to put out on social media. Because in the end, we're all, anybody who gets a microphone, who gets an amplifier, has an opportunity to impact someone else. And it's something that I take very seriously. And I hope a lot of other folks in the industry, on television, on radio, make it a point to take it seriously as well. Because the competition between players and coaches doesn't necessarily mean that disagreement has to be disagreeable to the extent that it's become. So I hope that's going to be something that adds a little bit of positivity to things, and hopefully some perspective gets added. My thanks to all the guests from the show tonight, to Patrick Finley, to Herb Howard, Cassie Carlson, and Adam Rittenberg. My thanks as well to Robbie Triano. I'm Anthony Herron. Appreciations and salutations for listening in to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
We're back live with more Anthony Herron on 670 The Score in Odyssey Station.
So the way that I talk about sports, talk about things in general, the amount of time I get to spend on the air, on television and radio, I'm certainly feel pretty blessed because I do love what I get to do so much. And I'm under the impression that comes across often enough in the time I spend on the air. But that being said, I don't know that it's the most lucrative way to go about it, because while I do, try to pretty consistently exude a certain degree of enthusiasm, energy, a passion for the topics that I discuss, but I'm not necessarily prone to bombast, if you will. I'm certainly not prone to insult when it comes to the coaches, the players, the athletes, the participants that are involved in the things that in the sports, in the events that I'm covering. My goal is usually entertain, inform, try to give you a sense for how I view these things and my experience in having been a player and a coach and an evaluator of these moments. And it's honestly a little bit ironic that Skip Bayless stepping down from FS1 just happens within the last hour here. Because discourse is a topic that I did want to discuss before I got off the air tonight. And like I was referencing, there are certainly some examples of very prominent members of the sports media who have not, in my opinion, haven't aided the discourse. And, our sensibilities with all these things are very subjective. What will be different from one person to the next. I try to err more on the side of being willing to tell you when I think someone's messing up, when I think a play caller isn't getting the job done, when I think fundamentals of an athlete are off, why something worked, why something didn't work. But I do try to deliver that. Or when I take callers, I try to interact with them with a level of respect with that discourse. And that does seem like it's continued to erode over the years, over the last really couple of decades, in our sports discourse, in our political discourse as well. And both are things that we're all extremely, extremely passionate about. The level of gravity in the sports conversation pales in comparison to the life-altering things that could happen with some of the political discourse. And certainly all of you know at this point what happened on Saturday with the assassination attempt on Donald Trump. And my hope is just that that is sort of a touch point for folks as we enter deeper into the political season and the presidential election season, that it's something that will allow people to take a deep breath, to evaluate how they interact with each other, to evaluate the words that they choose to say on the air, the things that they choose to put out on social media. Because in the end, we're all, anybody who gets a microphone, who gets an amplifier, has an opportunity to impact someone else. And it's something that I take very seriously. And I hope a lot of other folks in the industry, on television, on radio, make it a point to take it seriously as well. Because the competition between players and coaches doesn't necessarily mean that disagreement has to be disagreeable to the extent that it's become. So I hope that's going to be something that adds a little bit of positivity to things, and hopefully some perspective gets added. My thanks to all the guests from the show tonight, to Patrick Finley, to Herb Howard, Cassie Carlson, and Adam Rittenberg. My thanks as well to Robbie Triano. I'm Anthony Herron. Appreciations and salutations for listening in to Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Odyssey celebrates National Hispanic Heritage Month, brought to you by T-Mobile. You can count on T-Mobile to help you stay connected on America's largest 5G network.
Trying to figure out what to eat for dinner yet again? With Knorr sides and bouillon as your not-so-secret ingredient, you can skip the drive-thru and do dinner at home. Knorr taste combos provide a menu of delicious, affordable, and well-balanced meals that you can prepare in 30 minutes or less. Visit Knorr.com to get quick and easy recipe ideas for your home-cooked weeknight dinners. It's not fast food, but it's so good.